Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. And this evening, we'll talk about the rising food prices and the reaction of African governments. And with us tonight is from the Kenyan capital Nairobi is David Ohito. David is the regional news editor at The Standard, Kenya's oldest newspaper. Once again, glad to have you, David, on the show.
Yeah, nice to see you, to talk to you again, Douglas. We are ready.
How is Nairobi?
Nairobi is cool. There's just been an afternoon shower, so we hope it will give us some vegetables and reduce the rising cost of vegetables.
That's one sure way to go.
Yeah.
Yes. And from Durban in South Africa, we are joined by Suleiman Mugula. Mugula is an independent political analyst based in Durban. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas.
Is it raining also in Durban?
Not as much.
I see, but you don't have hunger there yet.
Not as such, really.
Okay. Gentlemen, once again, welcome to Reporters Roundtable. And as you know, a global surge in food prices is causing havoc across the developing world, more so in Africa. And thousands of people are caught in a widening arc of hunger, stretching from Egypt to Cameroon to Zimbabwe to almost everywhere on the continent. Gentlemen, let me begin with you, David. Your government in Kenya last week cut taxes on fuel because rising cost of fuel caused most of these commodities to go up also, including food. Was that a wise move or is it helping?
Well, it's yet to take effect in the ordinary poor people that are worst affected, the most vulnerable people are yet to feel the effects of the government change. But I think the government has been cornered like a rat when Kenyans started protesting on the streets and they saw that their seats of power are under threat and they were forced into action. Ordinarily, we are talking of cabinet ministers who do not know hunger. We are talking about a government of 42 cabinet ministers and two principals who cannot foresee that this is danger for the people we are leading, who cannot foresee that this is too bad for the people that we are earning through taxes we pay. It's been an ad hoc approach, and the whole afternoon, the Prime Minister has been meeting with bureaucrats, the permanent secretaries, to try and find working solutions that will really bring down costs of food.
I see. That at least is a better move than your neighboring country, Uganda, where the protesters who are protesting these rising in food costs and fuel costs are being clobbered and hammered and brutalized. Suleiman, do you think the Kenyan way should be the way to go, or the Ugandan way is the better? Because if you beat up people, they don't have to mind hunger. They can just be beaten up.
Surely, the way my colleague has said, I think we need, first of all, one way to credit the Kenyan government, but at the same time also the way he has put it up to extend our outrage also on the way our governments have handled the whole issue of price increase for food. Let's put it in perspective. I think the question of food prices is not new. It has been going on for a long time. Many countries, the poor people have been experiencing this food price increase year by year. The conditions of the ordinary man have been deteriorating for over the years, while the conditions of our leaders have been improving and getting better and better over the years. So I think it is justifiable the way the Kenyan government has tackled it. They allowed the demonstration to go on. They didn't brutalize anybody. Even before even the demonstration went on, they had preempted. The Minister of Finance had tried to reduce the taxes on on diesel and paraffin. The next day, it was debated very much in Parliament, as our colleague will tell us there in Kenya. And then, again, as he has said today, the Prime Minister is hand on with it, trying to see whether they can help the people, because they have realized that really suffering is a reality. People are suffering. So the question which you asked, what about Uganda? The Ugandan issue is very, very sad. The response of the government has been high-handed, very uncivilized, very callous, very inhumane. It shows a lack of leadership. It shows a leadership which is on a different wavelength from the people which it is leading.
I see. But gentlemen, let me begin with you again, Suleiman. What's the cause of this? You know, is it lack of poor planning? I mean, is it poor planning because you can't depend on rain in the 2011, you're depending on rain for food. And governments can't keep taxing because in most some of these countries, the tax on fuel is almost 50%. You just expect that things will just work out their way out. Are these countries in Africa planning for their people?
You are right, 100%. They are not planning. From since 2002, it was the AU decision that they increased the budget which is being allocated to agriculture. After 3 years, no country, I think a few countries, about three, had increased their budgetary allocation to agriculture. There is no emphasis on agriculture. Basically, Africa is supposed to be the breadbasket for the other continents. We have got good soils. We have got hardworking people. We have got, in many areas, the rain is not as bad. We are supposed to have an emphasis on to give a good budget for agriculture. We are supposed to have food reserves because we cannot continue without food reserves. In South Africa, we have got food reserves. Much as the price increases, we don't think of starving in any part of South Africa because there are silos everywhere. There is food reserves. Up in the continent, the leaders are just sleeping year by year. So all those ones are scapegoats. The question is a question of governance. We don't have governance on the continent.
David, what's your response to the lack of planning?
I think I have always complained in this program before that for me, an African leader who has gone to school, who has 2-3 university degrees, is the same as this one who never went to anybody's school. And it cuts across board. How dare we spend about 30 times more on military in Kenya for a country that has never gone to war, and we cannot invest a similar amount to agriculture? And then how dare we make silly, silly decisions like buying a bag of maize, which is 100 kilograms, at 5 times the price which we, instead of paying local farmers similar amount to, you know, or just even half, not even similar, to motivate them to improve farming, to produce enough so that we can have enough in our reserves. It is very shameful that we have too much arable land, we have enough water, even if it is not too rains, and that water from Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania feeds the deserts of Egypt and so on, yet we cannot produce food for ourselves. This is a big shame which I think the country must sit down, African countries must sit down and resolve. We are told that we have very brilliant economists working at World Bank, at the financial institutions globally, and they cannot put their pen and paper and vision for their countries. It's quite a big shame. We must rethink Africa's leadership.
Douglas, people are not demonstrating because they are not aware of the increase in the fuel prices globally. People are demonstrating because there is a misallocation of their country's resources. The way my colleague is saying, how can, for example, Uganda be buying fighter jets as we speak today? How can it be buying fighter jets without looking at the cost of living for the people?
Yeah, because that you raised the issue there is very important. Uganda is spending almost a three-quarters of $1 billion. That's over $700 million. to buy fighter jets. And if you look at the budget for agriculture, for instance, it's nowhere even near that.
Douglas, it's a big shame. You sit in Parliament and you see very fairly educated ladies and gentlemen wearing their suits, and they cannot sit down and think, plan forward, budget that so that their constituents have enough food. Forget about even medicine. In fact, I believe that even the health challenges we are faced with every other day, the children were starving, are because they do not have this required nutrients, the required nutrition, 3 square meals in a day. We have children going to class with 1 meal a day. How dare they concentrate on their work even? It's almost impossible. And I think Africa must just shape and ship out these leaders. You know, there's very limited difference between Mugabe. You compare it with other African leaders like Museveni. And it's a big shame. We must find food for ourselves. And why the hell are we obsessed with this military tank? I think what happened in North Africa, that you can have those military tanks, but the people can jettison you out of power like they did with Mubarak, should send a very strong message that instead of buying those tanks, feed those mouths and you're better off.
And gentlemen, I found it very interesting, now that you mention it, countries like Kenya, Uganda, Zimbabwe, these were the breadbaskets of those regions. They had a thriving agricultural industry. None of them now are putting out their hands begging for food. Suleiman.
No doubt about it, Douglas. Uganda had one of the progressive cooperative system, cooperative union in East Africa. It collapsed. I mean, without cooperative unions, without organizing the farmers, without organizing and incentivizing them, without the agriculture extension officials going to them to advise them. If you look in Uganda, for example, the production level has fallen so low in almost across the board. Let it be bananas, let it be beans, let it be maize. It has been going like that. All the statistics are there. They show that there is decline in the production, which means there is no government intervention whatsoever. Instead, people have produced tanks and earth-moving equipment to arrest just innocent, harmless people. You don't need earth-moving equipment and tanks to arrest the harmless people who don't even have safety pins. Instead, you have to look at what the problem of the people are. The question is, do these people have a genuine cause to go on the street? The answer is yes. Why do they go to the street? Because the parliament is sleeping. Because the government is sleeping. They cannot rely on the parliament because the parliament would rubber stamp what the president has said. There is only one citizen. There is only one person who owns the country, and that is the president, together with his security forces. The other people are third-class citizens. So what do they have to do? They have to go on street to try to liberate themselves.
I see. That is if the government is responsive. Gentlemen, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about the role democracy plays in the alleviating this hunger and food crises, and also look at the effect of the rural-urban immigration. Let's take a short break. We'll be back right now.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We come to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the rising food prices and the reaction of African governments. Our panelists are David Ohito of the Standard newspaper and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, here in Studio 18. Gentlemen, let's look. Some people have said the unprecedented rural-urban migration may have a cause to the lack of food and the rising cost of food, because now you have so many mouths to feed in urban areas, people who are not even some of them are unemployed. Let me begin with David. What's your reaction to that?
It's true, but that is also an aspect of poor planning. If we decided to devolve industries, if we decided to meaningfully engage citizens in their rural areas, there would be nobody interested in coming to the capitals or to the urban centers to shop for jobs and means of living. I've, for example, today, if I had an opportunity to do the same job I'm doing from my rural home, I'll take the fast bus home. And that explains why we have recently, and also a new constitution, which looks at devolution, taking resources back to the people. And I think with that, I'm ready to be the editor of my county newspaper, for example, instead of sitting in Nairobi here, yes, to be an editor of a national newspaper and living in some small flat where my children cannot run the way I used to run in the whole playfield when I was a small child. Yes, those are the challenges, but coupled with that is also the rapid population growth. We still have very big families. Kenya's population is one of the fastest growing, the same to our neighbors in Uganda. And we are growing at a higher rate than we are producing food for ourselves. So definitely we are bound to run into such problems. Even in terms of health, we are giving so many live births and every other day compared to the small number of health facilities we have. And it's spirals over to the education sector. We have too many children, boys and girls, who are enough of the school-going age but have no facilities to go to. And then the bigger challenge is that we are churning out so many youths every single day, every year, and so many of them miss out university and technical training institutes, and we are keeping them in urban centers. I think this is a time bomb. It's not only a food time bomb, but it's also a political time bomb that will explode very soon. Those youths without jobs, able-bodied men and women, when they get to the streets, Mubarak is the only solution I see on sight. So African government must really learn and change and learn from what happened in Egypt, what has happened in Libya or is still happening there. And for them, if they think that they can live in those citadels of power, in the neighborhoods that are strongly guarded by men and women in guns, I think it's just for a short time. Sooner or later, we will all be on the streets running.
Suleiman, do you think the governments are doing enough to, first of all, as David points out, the rural-urban migration that's not planned is a serious lack of planning on the parts of the governments?
For sure, Douglas. Our governments have been sleeping for a long time. You'll find that there is a natural instinct for people to move away from suffering. You find that the way I've already mentioned that past government or sensible government, for example, in the past, like in Uganda, they had the cooperative movement. The cooperative movement, the aim of the cooperative movement was to organize farmers to enable them to market their goods, to produce sufficiently to produce and then be able to market their goods rightly. That one has to be accompanied by other factors like infrastructure and so on. All these things, if they collapse, farmers find it so difficult to get a living from their farms. As a result, they have to migrate to town hoping that they will get better jobs. So many of our people are running away from the villages because they can no longer earn a living from agriculture. Otherwise, in the past, people used to plant their crops, go market their products. They were able to take their children to school using the money which they have earned from their farms. Right now, as it has always been said in Uganda, it is even so difficult to take a product which you have produced from the rural area to the urban area. It is more expensive to transport the product which you have gone because the roads have collapsed. The transport is so expensive. So in such cases, people just abandoned the villages and move to town, the town which are unplanned. So the whole issue is a question of governance. You'll find that our government have concentrated around parliament and themselves and their families, and they have ignored the other one. The way Kito has said, the number of unemployed youth is so much, and they are not even bothered. Many governments are happier when these people are going to Europe to go and instead remit money for them. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it is a very serious situation, and what we are seeing right now is the tip of an iceberg.
Gentlemen, there's something also very intriguing. Why is it that where there are democracies that are established, this problem of uncontrolled food prices or hunger or people not having these problems, the more a democratic country is, the less of these that there are of these problems? Is there a correlation between good governance and democracy and, on the other hand, these problems we're talking about? Let me begin with you, David.
Yes, good governance goes hand in hand with democracy, and you cannot rule out that. You know, when we have transparency and accountability, we know how much food we can produce in a day. We without fear that if we keep them in a strategic reserve, then politicians will go around and steal them or sell them through the back door. Those are some of the basic challenges we are facing. I tell you, in Kenya now, it's been planting season, and farmers all over the country crying that we do not have the right seeds which can withstand the rapidly changing climate and weather. And I have not heard the Minister for Agriculture say he is doing something constructive so that next year we are not faced with a similar situation. And yet the Minister for Agriculture is a very well-educated person with a PhD, has worked as a diplomat. She works in the U.S., in the U.K., and she cannot make such a simple decision. So what the hell was she going to do in school if she cannot fix such simple problems? We need just working solutions. The mothers who are busy producing food in our rural areas are simply asking, give me the seeds and I'll produce this number of bags of maize. Give me fertilizer at this subsidized rate, and then you can come and pick enough maize and beans here to feed the rest of Kenyans. Yes, we have challenges like drought and the bad climate, which have conspired against the African again. But that is no excuse to lose lives. In Kenya, in the last 1 week, in the northern part of Turkana, 5 lives have been lost because people did not have what to eat. What a shame that we have in this era, yet the ministers are riding in limousines and have too much bread in their houses, throwing away the ones that are rotting. I mean, it's a big shame. We must change.
Suleiman, you want to jump in?
Yes, please. Yeah, the question of democracy. First of all, even before I give an example, let's look at Uganda again. In a democracy, a leader of opposition is a shadow president. Sincerely speaking, any security institution treats him as a shadow president. And you cannot be arrested like a chicken thief or being brutalized in public like that.
Mm-hmm.
In a democracy. In South Africa, if you want to see the role of democracy and the proper democracy and good governance, come down to South Africa. Leave alone that issue where they treat opposition leaders as chicken thieves. Here in South Africa, an opposition leader is a president in the waiting.
Yeah.
He can be a president tomorrow. There is no security man who can brutalize him, who can throw him on a van. He cannot be thrown in a van. That is impossible. The whole country, even your own supporters will run against you because that one is an old person. it is an African to humiliate an old person.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot simply humiliate him like that. Number two, legally, someone is innocent until proven guilty. You can only ask him to escort you to the police to answer some few questions. So you can see the level of dictatorship which is in some of your countries up there. Otherwise, for us here in South Africa, which is a democracy, issues concerning the people, the leaders are servants of the people. Where issues are affecting the people, the leaders know that unless they tackle those problems, they will not have power. They don't rely on the police and the security forces. They don't move you as moving you people to arrest anybody. People have got a right to demonstrate. As we talk today, the president of South Africa cannot make any speech without mentioning the fight against unemployment. Every speech he makes these days, he is putting emphasis on the creation of jobs, because that is the crisis we have in the country.
Okay.
And he knows that without touching them, he will have no power tomorrow.
Yeah,
people are demonstrating day and night. The police only protects them. They go and present their memorandum, and they answer.
Okay, gentlemen, as we wind up, let's look at the role of corruption in all this. David, first.
It is so bad. It's the biggest cancer we are having in African countries today. In Kenya, it's so bad, we are still battling how a whole lot of government ministers went and stole the country's maize about 3 years ago.
Yes.
And it's a big shame how we go on even to rape our own strategic reserves to feed our mouths so that we make a coin out of it. And every other minister is competing to see what commission am I going to get in a deal, instead of looking at how can I turn around the lives of my people. It's really a big shame. Corruption has messed Africa. It has gobbled so much funds. As we speak today, the permanent secretary in Treasury estimates that the country loses up to 30% of what we collect as taxes through corruption. How worse can we be? I think Africa may need recolonization in terms of the mind, in terms of good leadership to move forward. At this rate, I have no future. I don't think any Africa has. Maybe South Africa, as Suleiman says.
Suleiman, 30 seconds on the corruption issue.
Corruption is a big challenge to our African countries, but also we have got a consolation from Egypt. What has happened in Egypt is very consoling. They can take the money, let the politicians take the money, but all of it will be returned the day the government changes. Their children will not take that money. All those ministers, let them read the script in Egypt. All the money is going to be recovered, including from the president who is now on his deathbed. They want the money back.
I see. Gentlemen, I think on that note, let's hope that the money will come back. Well, that's the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, David Ojitos, regional news editor at The Standard, Kenya's oldest newspaper, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Our producer tonight has been Bill Wakinja and the engineer, Keith Holmes, who will be back next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can listen to this program again on internet if you go to our main website at www.voanews.com. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thank you very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, in Washington.